Listen to these words of Scripture from Genesis, from Hebrews, and from Luke. The Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. He said, "If I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat so you can be refreshed and then go on your way, now that you have come to your servant." "Very well," they answered, "do as you say." So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. "Quickly," he said, "get three measures of the finest flour and knead it and bake some bread." Then he ran to the herd and selected a choice, tender calf, and gave it to a servant who hurried to prepare it. He then brought some curds and milk and the calf that had been prepared and set these before them. While they ate, he stood near them under the tree. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by so doing, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. In those days, a decree went out from the Emperor Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration and was taken while Quirinius was governor of Syria. All went to their own towns to be registered. Joseph also went from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was descended from the house and family of David. He went to be registered with Mary, to whom he was engaged and who was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for her to deliver her child, and she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the inn.
So, second week of practicing. Second week in high school track and field, that would mean team calisthenics on the infield. Everyone stretching out their muscles, then branching out into smaller groups. Long distance runners do them for the milers, wind sprints for the hurdlers, weight room for the shot putters and discus throwers. That would be the second week of practice there. But here we are suggesting that the life of a Christian faith has practices too. And we are the second week in. And maybe it should be said straight away that we have not begun an 8-week series on Christian perfects, but a series on Sundays exploring Christian practices. Practices that have enough space for us to stretch and grow in our faith. Last Sunday, we began with the practice of honoring the body, that our bodies, whatever opinions we might presently have about them, are really quite marvelous creations in their day-to-day functions, that whether you cherish your original maternity room version or whether you yearn for a 2.0 update, our bodies are worthy of honor. These God-created bodies that we have been granted are worthy of our care and healthy connections, along with grateful praise. So, how goes it? How have we been getting along with our bodies? It takes practice. It will take honor. Today we take a look at another one, another practice to practice. This one goes by the name of hospitality. And as a deeply introverted person, I cannot think of a topic I'd rather not tackle than this one. Hospitality. I'd rather pass hospitality over to Connie and ask for the Lord's mercy upon myself. That said, when we look up the word hospitality in a dictionary, we will find a definition that goes something like this. Which is the friendly and generous reception and entertainment of guests, visitors, and or strangers. If we were to dig a little deeper into the word hospitality, we would find that the root of the word is in Latin, hospis, and it actually can mean host, guest, or stranger. Hospice is also the root of a lot of other words we know, like host, hostel, hotel, hospice, hospital, and hostel. These words, host, hostel, and hotel, all have a kind of clean bedsheets and doilies under the gravy boat kind of feel to them. But from this Latin word, we also get the other words like hospice, hospital, and hostel, which all carry an important but different kind of flavor. So in the end, I suppose that we could say that hospitality has a kind of wide range of meanings. Guests and visitors and strangers would be a way to summarize them. To begin, I would like to share two photographs. They come from our recent trip to Ireland, and these photo credits do go to one of our companions named Larry Brennan, whose camera was never far away from us. First is this one. It is what is left to the entrance of a 6th century monastery. 6th century, it is old, it is very old. St. Kevin, anybody ever heard of St. Kevin? Was the founder. And at that time, it was a very remote location. It was in a hard-to-get-to place. It is actually sandwiched between two Wicklow mountains with two lakes in a valley that feed the stream that runs alongside the monastery. Its name is Glendalough, which literally means the glen between two lakes. It's very remote. Now, the 6th century was a very long time ago, in a time and place that is very different than 2018 USA. St. Kevin was born in Ireland in the year 498, in a land that was governed very differently than we are democratically used to. Back then, there was no National Guard, there's no standing police force to monitor safety, and so a tribe or a tribal family or Christian community like Glendalough was in charge of its own welfare against the wilds of nature and the rather wild and unruly nature of those persons who were roaming the countryside. And so enclosed walls were built around the community for its safety and its protection. And so what we see here is a long time ago entry gate of what was once a thriving Christian monastery, 1,500 years ago. But there's one feature that I want us to notice. See that there is not one arch there, but two. Long ago, there used to be an apartment situated above the arches. Maybe a little bit like this one. This is not the same place as the first picture. This is another monastery called Glenstall. It has been restored and is still in full use. But I wanted us to see the little apartment situated above the gate. It would have been where the gatekeeper lived. It was his job to be on duty to mind the gate, the comings and the goings from there. This double arch is the entry point of a 6th century community and is sometimes called the threshold. The place where you stepped into a different way of life. There's actually a cross etched on a stone slab as you passed into this threshold space. And I think the threshold gate has something to do with what we're now understanding as hospitality. A visible sign that Christian practices were practiced in there, and that it was not entirely up to the gatekeeper to make determinations if a stranger came by, a wanderer, or if a mom with no milk for her infant happened by, it was up to the abbot to decide things, either to provide help for them or to invite them in to stay on and contribute to the community or to lodge them overnight or to send them packing. Either to help, contribute, lodge, or send packing. And I think understood this way, hospitality does have a certain give and take ring to it. This Irish setting would have been quite similar to the one we heard from our scripture from Genesis during a time in history of walled cities and city gates, of a countryside life going on the outside of these gates, and these three men show up and are standing close to Abram, and he runs to greet them. And there is bowing and a foot bath and a tree rest and a little bread and then a lot of bread and a calf and curds and milk and adequate time for them to be eaten. But in this scripture lesson, Abram is somehow aware of a divine presence in it all. And later in the book of Hebrews, we hear it this way: do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some have entertained angels without knowing it. And wouldn't it be nice if that were always true? If strangers would be angels at the church office doors, at your front door, at your car door. But it's not. It's not always the case. And so we might carry some latent fears on one hand and Hebrews 13:2 in the other. Stories like my grandson Leish once told me while fishing one day at Fiddler Pond, the story he heard from his mom, who had had it passed on from her dad, of a Goshen motel owner who had given overnight refuge to a traveler who had later been found murdered in his bed by that traveler. Christian man. So yeah, we hear the stories, and maybe we too have been jilted in our efforts at hospitality, not killed, but maybe screwed over. And then to hear from Hebrews 13:2 that we should not neglect the stranger, and that the stranger just may be a divine appointment of some sort. And to hear the innkeeper story from Luke, where there was no vacancy in the house, but he had offered his stable anyway, bent over backwards to accommodate Joseph and Mary and their situation, and after all, a stable birth was better than a roadside birth. And so how do we keep an openness to the divine on this two-way street called hospitality? I'm not sure. But for myself, I had found it helpful, like Kyle referred to remember the times when hospitality has been granted to me. Not me offering it to someone, but being on the receiving end of someone else's good graces, that helps. And when you are on the receiving end of hospitality, it helps us understand the nature of God a little better. And the instruction to imitate that. And then there is this 6th century monastic gate with its threshold entry showing us that hospitality is to be done with care. That the gate is open to receive strangers. That there is a place to contribute to the community, along with a chapel church to worship in, and for divine risks to be taken, that hospitality is truest when it is also a grace received. And this entry gate also suggests that there may be some things that need to be guarded against. Sometimes a gate needs to be closed. That constantly doling oneself out will leave oneself doled out. And that hospitality is not a once-and-done item to be checked off a Christian checklist, but that it is a divine practice that finds a place in the rhythm of Christian communities, in Abram's tent community, in St. Kevin's monastery, and a practice for Maronites too, apparently.
For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome, who shows no participality and accepts no bribes. He defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow, and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. And you are to love those who are foreigners, for you yourselves were foreigners in Egypt. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people from one another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Sorry. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go and visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. And then he will say to those on his left, depart from me.
The year was 1973, the year that I had to make some big decisions to end my college career halfway through, to marry my girlfriend Connie, and to begin work on the family farm. And since my dad was taking a new job at the farm machinery dealer, the farm operation was being left to me. And Dad said, now there's one thing that I need to tell you before you begin. Farming is not a job, it is a way of life. Get to know the difference. And it's true. It is a way of life that has seasonal rhythms, a spring, a summer, a fall, and a winter, and your way of life will differ in each of those seasons. It is a way of life that involves everyone. It pulls you together. Your wife and your son and your daughter will help, and your three sisters and your brother and your mother will sometimes help you, and your father will help fix things, and your neighbor over the hill will help you. All are in it, in this way of life. There will be banner days, and there will be downer days. There will be days when the weather is so glorious that it will suspend time, and there will be days when minutes will seem to seem like hours. Farming is not a job, he said. It is a 7 days a week, 31 days a month, 365 days a year way of life. Your kids will sled, and they will puddle jump, and they will giggle when calves will lick their arms, and they will find kittens in the haymow, and they will nurse the skinny ones back to health, and they will bury the injured ones, and they will raise questions about everything on this farm. Farming will inspire you one day, and it will test you the next. Farming is not a job, the day my dad told me, and he was right. It is a way of life. And I think the same should be said about Christian hospitality, that it is not a nice sermon topic to be listened to one day and to go home, nor is it an item to do once and then cross it off the Christian checklist as done, as a job done. Hospitality is less a job and more of a Christian way of life, to be open and attentive, to be selective and divine and helpfully practiced. This morning's lesson from Deuteronomy that was just read is quite blunt about God, who will execute justice for the orphan and the widow, and who loves strangers. God, who is mighty and awesome and not partial, and who loves strangers, providing them food and clothing. And this morning's lesson from Deuteronomy is also quite blunt about y'all, about us all. Y'all shall love the stranger too. Food and clothing, which should find our way into both our politics and our churchetics. And if that's not enough, Jesus goes there too. In his now famous parable way of saying things, Jesus with some terribly practical earthly stuff to practice. Food for the hungry, food. Drink for the thirsty, water bottles. Clothes for the naked ones, clothes to protect vulnerable bodies that are worth honor, sick to be cared for, and prison visitation. And what is so unusually odd in this Jesus story is that those who were doing it had gotten so used to doing it that they didn't even question it anymore. It had become their way of life. It had become natural to them. So this thing called hospitality, and let it be said, it's not the job of the preacher to guilt us all into doing it better, but to ask perhaps, where do I jump in? Maybe it is to put Jesus' words alongside our dining table and ask, who eats here? Who eats at our table? Do any of Jesus' honorable mentions make it? Are there any strangers at our table? And to jump in, maybe we go back to the Latin words for a clue. Host, hostel, hotel, the clean bedsheets and doilies under the gravy boat kind of hosting, which are needful and oh so good. Yeah, there was the evening on our Ireland trip after a cool, rain-swept day and a half-hour hurricane-fueled ferry ride of bob and weave and nausea that we arrived at our inn to a pleasant hostess, a hot dinner, clean sheets, and a shower. And there is such a thing about being hosted where one restores one's soul. I will vouch for that. There is that kind of guest and host hospitality that you will never forget when you have received it. But maybe our jumping in point is with the other Latin-y type words, hospice and hospital, where the care of another human body becomes more purposed, more accented. And where do our Christian practices line up with what Jesus mentions with a deep care for the sick, to visit and to touch and to heal? Hospitality, it lies on the threshold of our faith, where the unknowns and fears and introversion and fatigue are found, but also God's care and wisdom, where greeting and rest await, and where the angels nod their agreement. Thanks be to God.